Welcome to AFE. My name is Devang Desai, and this week I'm joined by Nick Andrade and friend of the show, Sean Kay. On today's show, we chat Chris Armas out at TFC, Leo Messi doing messy things at Copa America, and it's coming home, ? It might actually be. Good God. Hold your children. Plus, it's your questions on the mailbag, Ask AFP. Gentlemen, how are we doing? Sean Kay, welcome back, friend.
Woo!
It's been quite a while. Parenting's been crazy. I'll just tell you that. I'm glad to be back, though. It's me not just yelling at a microphone for an hour a week. It doesn't let me cathart all my soccer feelings, so it's really, really good. Mm-hmm. How are you guys doing?
It's great. Great, man. We're happy to have you back. Davey Goss living the American dream right now because it's the 4th of July weekend, so he's off this week. We thought, who better to fill his shoes than Mr. Canada himself, Sean Kay. So that's awesome. I'm well, sir. I got a haircut, which I feel like a totally new person.
Short?
Very short, yeah.
Oh, so the long locks are gone. I'm going to miss those guys.
The long locks, they're gone. I know. And I took some photos to cap the day of my last day with the hair and we went to the park and stuff. But yeah, it was nice. It was time. You know, the summer's too hot, but I had a good weekend. Nick, what about you?
I was pretty good. I actually heard that the reason why that David Goss is actually not here today is because he lost in the Nathan's hot dog eating contest to Joey Chestnut. So he's recovering. I hope him all the best and we'll see him next week. But my weekend was good. You know, I'm on the England bandwagon, I think, you know. I think it's time and I think it's coming
home. Wow. Jeez.
Welcome. Welcome on the wagon.
From Portugal to England, two minnows. You pick them.
There's no Brazil to cheer for in the Euros, so I gotta pick somebody.
On the hot dog note, just like Joey Chestnut, like legend, GOAT. I'm not trying to come at him, but if you're not winning that and you're up on that stage doing that to yourself, I think you have to ask some questions.
Because you know too, you know that Joey Chestnut's gonna win, so it's more embarrassing that way, right?
Yeah, it's a tough one because there's still that whole Kobayashi drama in the background.
Right.
I feel like the hot dog eating contest really lost its credibility about 5 years ago when Kobayashi sort of was pushed away by Nathan. So we don't know if Joey is the record holder.
That's true.
Hot dog eating basically followed boxing as quickly as possible and into being discredited. And we have like mixed belts. We need a referendum on who is the true hot dog goat. No, it's a great point. And also I learned yesterday, they puked that out so fast afterwards. It's disturbing. A lot of this is disturbing. It's the perfect America and a holiday to shout out, not to slander our wonderful neighbors on this holiday of theirs, but it was a huge week of soccer. It might actually be coming home, guys. Sean, that Ukraine game, Harry Kane,
pump the brakes.
Are you not ready for me to do the reverse jinx here to send you guys crashing out? This is the plan, right?
No, They played very well. Credit to them. They're playing incredible football. They're playing extremely well defensive style and pushing and finding the goals through their skilled players. And we'll get into this a bit more, but I just haven't seen them up against a real powerhouse or anyone that's going to actually pressure that back line. And like Stones, Maguire, Walker is just a mistake waiting to happen. I'm just like, obviously, I don't even know if it's Denmark, the team that's going to be pressuring them, but if it's the Italians in the finals, if they get through, I really do worry about the team. But that being said, no matter what, this is a success. Two semifinals in a row in two different tournaments. You gotta be proud for them no matter what. And it's incredible to see Harry Kane continue to cement himself as the greatest striker in the world. So,
I shuddered. And again, I've said this before, but the problem with this England team, as an England hater myself, is just far too likable. There's way too many likable players and people like Gareth Southgate. So I'm learning to live with it. All right, we will get to that, though, as Sean said. A reminder that we are on patreon.com/afootballpodcast. Wanted to shout out another new patron, Nicolo. thank you for joining us. Big help for us continuing to do the show. Plus, you get the show ad free. You get to join us on the Discord where we're chatting footy all the time. A lot of drama during the TFC game, as you can imagine. But yeah, it's pretty fun. So Nicolo, thanks to you. And you can join him as well by heading on over to patreon.com/footballpodcast. Today, when we return, yeah, TFC, they had to do something because it was really, really bad. And they did. Chris Armas is out. We're going to talk about all that coming up next on AFP.
It's a collective disappointment, and I think amongst the players as well, that we have not performed well, and we have been too soft, especially defensively. We haven't executed on the offensive side of the ball. The decision was made that a new tactician possibly could give our current roster a better look and maybe a spark to get something out of them that was missing right now.
There you have it. That was TFC exec Bill Manning sitting alongside Ali Curtis to announce the news on Sunday. Chris Armas out at TFC after a humiliating 7-1 defeat at DC United. A historical loss for the club. And you know what, Sean? It's serendipity that you're on with us, I think, to talk as this news has happened, because I think for a lot of TFC fans, myself included, the last weekend has led to some soul searching and like remembering where we came from and that not everything was rosy all the time. But I think it's fair to say that Saturday was one of those lowest points in this club's history, which is saying something, right? Because it's been a long time since we've had to approach these kind of thoughts. But that's what 7-1 will do to you on the road. I guess, what were your overall thoughts in terms of Sunday's news, because I think we knew something was going to happen, but Armas leaving, this opportunity for him, it seemed a bit too big in the end.
Yeah, I think the match between Toronto FC and Chris Armas was sort of flawed to begin with. I think when you look at the personnel that Toronto FC have currently in their roster and sort of the style that they had been successful with, and with sort of the decisions that Ali and Bill made, was sort of doubling down with re-signing veterans and thinking that they had a couple more years with it, it just didn't seem like that was the right to do both things at the same time. I think when you're looking at bringing in a veteran like Dom Dwyer, or you're re-upping Michael Bradley, or you're keeping Omar Gonzalez and Josie Altidore, and so on in the 30s, to then introduce a brand new system where you're asking them to use their legs more, to open up, to expose themselves a little bit more for greater success. I think that's the flaw in that, because you looked at the way that TFC was before and Greg's teams were so systematic and slow and looked for the moments where they could have their great players like Pozuelo or Josie or Akinola last year to find the space and then to score a goal. And then once again, tighten up and continue to move forward. And you just never were going to get that with Chris Armas. And as you could see, it became easier and easier to defeat the system that Chris had in place with these people in it. And so it needed to happen. You feel bad for everyone involved, because it's not great to see a club falter this quickly from being a championship contending team to being last, and seeing players that we know personally, or seeing executives that we've had relationships with, or a manager that we haven't really met, but at the same time, you just don't want to see this happen. It's just bad for everyone. So it's been a rough go, but I'm glad that the decision was made by the executive to move on quickly, because you can sort of stick around and see this through. But I think, once again, decisions have to be made now for the future so that next year can be saved.
Agreed. And they had a game on Wednesday, so you could have seen them stretching it out to see if there was an instant pushback. But I think I'm with you there. And I think the greater point, and I saw this on Sunday, all of those reasons you listed, Sean, like all of the concerns that we had coming into the season and this kind of blend of ideals where we had some academy kids that were rated really highly and we wanted to immerse them into the club and play them, but we had this aging vet core that we not only kept around, but we added to. With those additions you brought in that you mentioned, we could see it didn't really make sense at the beginning. And I think the issue is not just about Chris Armas, but about the wider lens of what is going on from Bill and Ali down in terms of what do they want, what they want to get out of this club and what do they see for the vision going forward. Do you think something changes with Jozy Altidore going forward? Because I think that's the million-dollar question. This is an opportunity potentially for them to write themselves out of a hole. I'm not sure really if either side is up for it. I know Ali said they were going to talk on Sunday.
Yeah, it's an interesting one with Jozy, because obviously, and this is all based on assumptions, I don't have the context I used to. Gwen isn't telling me anything, but the assumption is, just through reading between the lines, is that nobody was really interested in acquiring Jozy Altidore during these last few months where he was sort of put at a discount. So you've got to do the best thing for the club and the best thing for everyone is to find a way to mend this bridge. And not even, once again, it may never get back to the old kumbaya ways that the locker room could be, but you've got to get him in the shop window. You got to get him succeeding. You've got to get him healthy. And it, once again, if he starts scoring, people will show up. Jozy is an incredible talent. And I think that gets lost between whether it be injuries or controversy or whatever, is that he can be the best striker in the league when he's hot and when he's playing. So I think you've got to bring him back and everyone just needs to sort of suck it up for a while. Once again, not knowing what was said, what was done, but I'm just hoping that it wasn't irreconcilable. So
yeah. And I think the question we have here in our show rundown is, can TFC get out of this mess? And there is a scenario I can see, and part of it involves Jozy coming back and having a bit of that kumbaya for a couple of weeks of like everything feels great, but it's also coming back to Toronto. I think the weirdest part of this all is that Chris Armas never managed a game in Toronto and he's already out. Like, we, the extenuating circumstances we've talked about a lot on the show, but I think it remains important. And I wonder, with some light at the end of the tunnel, it sounds like TFC could be returning to BMO by the end of July. I wonder if that is maybe enough of a lifeline, because they have a lot of games left. I think Michael Bradley said this after the game on Saturday. There's still a lot of points on the table, but I mean, how confident are you that they can turn this around and eat? I mean, around, and it's all very vague. I mean, can they squeak into a playoff spot, or can they play attractive, good soccer? Because like you mentioned, man, like there's a lot of good players still here.
Yeah. At first, when the question was brought up in the rundown, I was like, no, there's no chance. Like, this team is too far gone. But when you sort of take a step back and you're like, okay, you got a game on Wednesday, which is going to just be who the heck knows. But you still have 10 days to sort of regroup. You've got the Gold Cup to sort of give yourself some time, figure out what's going on. You've got a guy who's coming in, and we'll talk about this later, but you got a guy who knows the team. He's been around in this group for the last little while, sort of knows the nuances and knows what he wants to do or has some ideas. So it can turn around, and yeah, you might be able to scrape yourself into a playoff spot, and who knows, there are some killers in this team that could really break it down, and we haven't really seen the full 11 out there, but with what has been shown on the pitch from players, because once again, as it comes down to, like, tactics are very important to a team, but you still need 11 guys on the pitch to put it in and not make mistakes and not continue to flounder. So I just, you need to see some changes from the players as well, and a system. But what do you think? Do you think they can get out of the mess? Do you think that there's the talent there still to get out?
I there's some huge questions that I think are going to have to be asked internally, because I wonder going forward, if now with this weight is off their shoulders and some hard questions need to be asked. I think deployment and who's being played and how much is definitely a question that has to be asked going forward, because if they can turn it around, I think it also depends on potentially Michael Bradley's role changing a bit on like a day-to-day basis per game, or Marky Delgado also changing his role a bit, or seeing maybe what you have more in some of the other players involved with the natural position. Like, I don't know Javier Perez really well. I don't know what you think about him, Sean, but like, he's got some league experience, as you mentioned. But I think a lot of my hopes on if they could turn this around is what they do with this interim tag, or what they do with the role. Like, Is it too early to talk about perfect world scenarios of like who would you love to see them bring in on a permanent basis? Like, what do you think is the right? Who do you think is the right coach right now?
I think the right coach, because I'm not going to pick a person because I don't know who that person is because the world is so wide open. But I think that the thing needs to happen, and it can come from Perez. It can come from anyone. But I think that what needs to sort of happen in the current is organize the 11 men on the pitch in a way that they're not thinking every single second about what the strategy is, and rather just playing the game and doing it. Because I feel like there's a lot of the time that in the game where TFC was currently playing, that they were thinking about where they needed to go and how they needed to press or how they needed to adapt, that mistakes were being made, or that there wasn't an organization where everyone was together, where it was one-on-one situations where mistakes were being made. And so you just need a cohesive unit to work through it. And simplifying tactics right away is that let's really not try to reinvent the wheel. Let's go back to a possession-based system where Michael Bradley could be dropped back a bit more. I know I was a bit vocal about Michael playing an advanced role on Twitter, but I still believe that he has a really good value to it. It's just, I think
we'll always have that Leon tie, man. We'll always have Leon.
but I think that what it comes to is just that I think that he's better fit in that protective role, so that you don't have a slower Omar or a wilder Mavinga able to make mistakes. But also, if they want to play deeper, then maybe it does fix Omar's speed issue or the mistakes of, like, it. The issue that seemed to be continuing over and over and over again is that the back line was too afraid to push forward to condense the field. Because the second that they did condense the field, the other team would stretch the field with pace, and the team as a collective could never make up with it, and it just continued to be this onslaught. So I think if you can collect, you can get that group and tighten them up with some simple tactics, and then start once again. And I'll say this, I think, the entire podcast, because as more of I think about the way England plays, the more that I've seen Italy play, the way that I see the LA Galaxy currently playing, it's all about organization in the back and letting your stars shine in the moments that they can create magic. And once again, it may not be the sexy way of doing it, but it's the way that's winning football games and getting points. And that's sort of what has been lost in all of this. So,
man, and I watching the LA Galaxy is like heading to your ex's Instagram page right now. It's a lot of pain. And even though they lost on the weekend and Chicharito might be hurt, Greg's doing a good job over there. Doesn't get easier for TFC Wednesday, New England Revolution, top of the East. Bruce Arena's got them humming, but yeah, I mean, if they're going to turn it around, it has to start pretty soon because there is a lot of games left, but a hell of a lot of ground they have to catch up. Of course, we'll follow that saga as it continues. On in the touch on the CPL this weekend, we had Left Forge for dead. Maybe not really, but I think the combination of them not having a good training camp, a normal training camp, it was super bizarre for the team that we had super high expectations for to start that slow. But again, explanations for that. I think when you beat a team like Pacific, who I was high on, it says a lot. But when you beat them the way they did, Sean, 3-0, it says even more.
I think that the other exciting part was the people on the score sheet. I think you're starting to see some of the expected players show up and get in moments, but you're completely right. You said it all. They didn't have a training camp. They're a team that has so much firepower. You can't keep the sleeping giant asleep too long. So they're back.
Fraser Aird with goal of the season, potentially. Love the long distance rocket strikes that pick up velocity and look like they could explode the net. One of the best goals of the season so far. Sean, we were chatting a couple weekends ago about random CPL stuff, and I'm curious, what is your biggest takeaway so far? Because I think for me, I talked to David about this on the show, I'm like, let's see what Halifax and Pacific can do in terms of being consistently as good as we've seen Cavalry and Forge kind of, and cement themselves as the better clubs in the league. And I thought Pacific, in terms of a measuring stick, I was a bit disappointed by that result of Forge. But what has left you thinking about, or who's impressed you the most so far?
I think that the it's I'm I don't mean to take the easy answer, and I'm trying to find a different way around it. But I think the keeper out of Valor is an interesting story. I would say before three games ago, I had no idea who Jonathan Soros is, but he's been extremely tidy. He's commanding. He's a good shot stopper. And I think that with a team that's not leaking in any goals right now, I think he's been just a really, really nice story to a team that is obviously at home feeling comfortable, after a couple sort of rough years. So it's been nice to see, Gale's group sort of, figure that out. And then I think the other cool story to it is that this is starting to be a bit of a theme coming out of Montreal. And I don't want to sort of always go back to being a hockey expert, but like, it just comes down to like Pantemis, Sirius, Kirpo, like the amount of talent that's coming out of Montreal as a goalkeeper. Like, it's just very similar to Hockey Canada, where it's like, well, if he's not French, then is he going to be good? But it's just the quality that's coming out of there. They've got CF Montreal need to be really proud of their system and continuing to push forward these goalies. And I think it's just another opportunity to see more loans between Major League Soccer and CPL, so that these players can get experience and can grow and once again provide value to both sides. I think that that's a really nice story. And then I've watched a couple York United matches, and similar to Forge, I think that they're going to pick up as things get better, as they start to train more. But Abzi seems to be an elite player over there.
He's legit.
He's been really nice to watch. And I think once that team starts to figure it out as a group, as a collective, and I think Jimmy will get there. I think that he's somebody that might just be a cup of tea in the CPL before he finds his way elsewhere. But that being said, he's the kind of guy that you have highlights for week in, week out. And one of the notes that I had written down for Fraser aired is like, I really hope the doc crew was filming on that, because for a marketing standpoint, if you have Fraser, that Fraser aired goal is going to be shown for the next 5 years on every single commercial. And it should be, because that was a hell of a rocket.
I'm glad you brought up the goalie pipeline. Maxime Crepeau made some insane saves against Dallas over the weekend as well. Some of the best reaction saves. Like, it is remarkable what they're doing. And our whirlwind continues. Finally, Copa America will keep it on this side of the Americas. The Gabriel Jesus super kick / sweet chin music that we have is one of...
By God!
Arturo Vidal called the referee a clown. And I'm like, honestly, it was not strong enough probably for the shenanigans going on for this game. But we're also getting some classic Messi stuff. But the biggest takeaway, I don't know how you guys feel about it, the font that Fox is using for the country names is just ridiculous. Is it supposed to be like a festival type lettering? But I can't stand it.
So here's the question. Is that just a Fox move, or is that a brand guidelines that come across from the entire broadcast?
I thought about what deck did they send out with the parameters, but I don't know, perhaps.
Because to be perfectly honest, I don't mind it.
They got to YouTube.
Going on the website, it looks like it's just a Fox thing. 100%.
Really?
Of course.
So, okay. Yeah.
I think they're maybe drinking going for a Lawless Carnival Kool-Aid look. I don't know.
That's fair. I want it. Miguel Almiron was having an amazing tournament before he got hurt, which is quite sad because I think we are quite fond of him MLS-wise. But it's funny, like Ronaldo goes out, and Nick, I'm not trying to punch while you're down, but this eternal Messi Ronaldo thing, and Cristiano Ronaldo's playing in front of packed stadiums in Hungary and doing all these things, and his name is out there. It feels kind of strange to say that Leo Messi is doing this quietly at Copa America, but there's no fans, and it's been a weird tournament that was barely put together in the end. Like, it just seems very low-key, but his singular class continues to just win out. It's, again, like, the guy has been doing this for such a long time, it's easy to forget just how good he is, but it's fun to watch him after daily Euro stuff just to turn on Copa America and be like, yep, he's still got it. He's still really good.
I think the thing that was really impressive that I I seem to forget, especially because of the way that he plays or the role he has at Barcelona. But the pace that he still has, there was a couple times where they tried to unleash him over the top, where he was in a one-on-one situation with the fullback. And like, he was toe-to-toe as a 34-year-old man, still like up to beat with one of the fastest fullbacks in the entire tournament. And you're just like, just jaw-dropping. Like, the goals, the assists, that first assist, still don't understand when he looked up. When he, it didn't look like he even looked over. I like, you watch it and you're like, when does he realize, or when does he know he's there? And then when does he look up to pass it? And he doesn't do any of that. And he still finds it like on the dime. It's just, I don't always want to bring it back to Messi, Ronaldo, but it's just, he's such a special player that I just can't ever think that anyone else is ever going to be as good as him. And I really hope that this is his tournament to take Argentina and lift a trophy, so that they can sort of just leave that one little thing alone and just let him be the greatest of all time, because it's just such a treat. And I'm ready to just enjoy them just playing soccer, because it's great.
It's well said. More greatness after the break when we come back. Harry Kane, yes, I said it. Harry Kane, greatness. Coming up next on AFP, England into the semifinals against Denmark, Italy versus Spain. We'll preview that. Coming up next on a football podcast.
Sterling, sure, he's going to set up another one. He has done. Kane again. He's got two, England have got three. And they're running riot in Rome.
Those wearing yellow, the heads have dropped. They didn't gather themselves after the second goal. And the third one is the killer, isn't it?
For a while, it was Raheem and Harry's were the only England goal scorers. I thought that was funny because Maguire, Kane, and Sterling. And then Jordan Henderson scored. But man, oh man, England running rampant over Ukraine, 4-0. To book their spot in the semifinal, which will be played in front of a home crowd, of course. Sean, we have to ask. It probably is coming home, right? I think I can lay out some really good reasons for why it is. But one of the biggest reasons is Gareth Southgate is a pretty good manager. And I think one of my big chirps coming into this tournament was my questioning of his tactics and what he... basically how you would handle all of this. I didn't rate him that highly, but I should have, I think, after Russia at least, because two tournaments as a row, in a row, like you mentioned, Sean, he's legit. I think I'm fully drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, he's putting it out a textbook on how to sort of manage in international football. International football is a completely different game from club football because you don't get access to the players a lot. The tactics need to be a bit simpler. And I think that there was a lot of questions on him, especially with the squad selection for the last four or five games, where you continues to switch things up and adjust, but making sure that in front of the net is safe at all times. And then just hoping that once again, your best two, three players can come up with some magic. And it might take 60, 70 minutes to break through, but he trusts the players and continues to put them in situations to succeed. I think another thing that I think all of us were saying, I know the broadcast was, Stevie and Kevin were talking about how this needed to be a bit more of a sort of rush out approach and like really push the pace, because they should show everyone that they are for real and this Ukraine team isn't as strong, and how Italy would do it or Spain would do it. And I think that they showed up and showed everyone that they're for real. And it's pretty impressive to see that collective of 11 players put on those performances week in and week out, day in and day out.
Just say, what a feel good story. The biggest league in the world with the biggest transfer fees was able to scrub up together a team of athletes, unknown guys. But no, you're right. I think my question in regards to would they load up against Ukraine was exactly that. Like, do you want to show what you're all about? And I was very happy to see that he did. But I'm very curious what the approach is to Denmark, because I think though Germany's Germany, and I know there's a lot of history there, not the greatest German side we've seen. And the competition so far that England has played has not been super elite. And I'm not saying Denmark is super elite, but I think they offer a different challenge, Sean, even without their talisman, Christian Eriksen. You've seen, I think, the emergence of some individual sensations, whether it be Dolberg or Damsgaard or Mila. Like, you've had stand-up performances in that regard. But I think team-wise, this will probably be the toughest outfit England has faced. You've got Højbjerg in there, someone you know really well. Like, I think you've got a collection of guys that will probably be the most difficult tests for England so far. So with that in mind, do you think Southgate leans back to maybe the defensive practicalities that he started the tournament with, or does he stick with this more run and gun system?
I think he goes back to the defensive practicalities, as you were suggesting. I just think that the place where I feel like Denmark has found a lot of success has been sort of through that, the two like wingers. And so what they try to do is to sort of drop the ball in and then get the ball across and find some gaps. And I think that the way that England's been playing in the past is that they're not really being too aggressive with their fullbacks. And I think if they can continue that and tighten up the back line, that if they can clog that transition, I think that they'll be in a good position. But that being said, as I mentioned earlier on, I really wonder if Kyle Walker is going to be in the lineup. Just, he has been so prone to mistakes and just in the transition. And I know he has the speed to make up for it, which is sort of like the devil. Like, you're just like, well, should we play this guy? Should we not? It's just, I don't know. I really wonder where he fits in there, but that's where I think that Denmark can really hit. But what do you, like, where do you guys see Denmark finding themselves?
This whole the story of like Christian Eriksen nearly dying and like being super tragic, I understand it is horrendous, and like I'm glad that it was used as a positive motivational force for the players and the coach going forward. But I found it interesting how they've used it that way. And I think like it would have been easy maybe to fall into like this old trope of like us against them, or like no one believed in us, blah, blah, blah. And like we've lost our captain and we're going to show the world. But I think this is really about Denmark just like doing this through a coach who's kind of not kind of laughed at, but kind of not taken seriously perhaps in the beginning, and now kind of showing his worth. And whether it be as a coach or as a man manager and getting some of these guys who had to play way bigger roles to buy in to stand out. So I consider them heavy underdogs, and I think England will win. But in terms of impressive stories and like, wow, like some of these guys, I think Mila didn't have a great season at Atalanta. Like, even though he's from that club, he didn't play that great. He was coming in maybe on a low, and look at him now. Like, I think you can argue he's one of the players of the tournament. And Kasper Dolberg had not scored in weeks and weeks and weeks, and now he's lighting it up on the biggest stage. It's awesome. But I think the dream comes to an end there. And I'm wondering now, out of Italy or Spain, who do you want to see in the final, Nick? Because I think Italy-England is kind of the final that we all deserve and want to see.
Did you guys have I don't know if you guys are on TikTok, but did you see the future is told on TikTok? Apparently that there's video footage of Italy beating England in the final, and they win 2-1. So right now, that's where I think it might be going. Based on that.
If, no spoilers, but if you've seen The Tomorrow War on Amazon Prime, with Chris Pratt, there's a scene from the 2022 Qatar World Cup. Yeah. Anyone was like, what? It was amazing. Anyways, continue.
But, you know, right now, I think Italy is on the most high. And we see the way Spain played. Like, Switzerland is a team that I thought, especially in the penalty shootout, I thought they were going to win that game. And then obviously it switched over to Spain. But Italy looked like the most dominant team in the tournament right now, in terms of even the way that they play and how fun they play and how they played Belgium and whatnot. That, I think they're the favorites. But like this England thing, I got to say, right before we get off the England train, but it's reminding me a little bit of 2016, okay? England's in the easier side of the bracket. They get to the final, and then, you know, they have the tactics. Like, Gareth Southgate, he can play a very defensive game. You sit back, get a 1-0 lead, and you win the whole thing. That's how I see it happening.
And I guess, yeah, and Denmark's not like Croatia, right? It's a different type of makeup. Like, Croatia, a bunch of killers on that team that England ran into, who are ready to win. Probably not the same vibe for Denmark. I wonder, being the favorite, though, the heavy favorite, they dealt with it well against Ukraine. I think they'll do it again against Denmark and Spain. Like, Spain, to me, maybe the weirdest team of this tournament, because overall, so it's like there is a lot of cool stuff going on. Like, there's the idea that there is this new generation of players ready to take over and kind of star out. But we talk about Pedri being the next it guy, and it very likely seems like he's going to be an absolute world star for many years. That's cool. But this group of attacking players leaves so much to be desired that I don't even enjoy particularly watching them. So I'm writing them off, and that means they'll probably win. But I wonder, is there a Busquets formula here where they pull this off? Probably.
It's so interesting that, like, if you would have told me 3 or 4 years ago that Spain is going to be the boring team and Italy is going to be the fun attacking team.
Yeah.
And you're like, is that really going to be it? But here we are now. But yeah, it's so interesting to watch this Spanish team play, because I feel like they're not as confident as they used to be. I see that midfield and it runs through Busquets, but outside of that, it's been pretty weak in my mind. I don't really love Pedri or Koke. Like, it's just, I don't see the cutting edge that I used to see from these elite players in Spain. I think their back line's okay. I think that they can hold it, but I think that this Italian team, especially the front six, just really will start to carve them apart. And once they do and open it up, I just can't see Spain clawing back in the game.
Yeah. I mean, I think they had shots, they had chances against Switzerland, a ton of them. And I think between Morata and Moreno, it's like, I just don't see it. And I don't see it at all. And I think we need to see Italy, England. The banter will be explosive. The memes will be terrible. We'll have a lot of shit being talked on both sides. Should be amazing. Wanted to talk about Belgium before we left Euros. I mean, I've been slagging Roberto Martinez for, it seems like, 10 years. So more than that. And it's been lessened by the fact that he's really good on TV. And I think he says things that other coaches and other pundits don't usually say in terms of what kind of insight they allow. So I'm less harsh on Roberto Martinez in general these days. That being said, I thought the way Belgium lost was quite disappointing. And I think the interesting thing is that I don't know what he could have done differently with the way the team was set up. I think you had a back line that was just old as hell. And, like, I don't know how they could have built differently around that, Sean. Like, is that a manager thing or is that an era thing? Because it feels like maybe the World Cup in 2022 is another chance, but it doesn't feel like it's going to happen.
No, I think the window's closing. And I agree with you on the back line. Like, I love Jan Vertonghen, Toby Alderweireld. And they had a place among the elite for such a long time, but that window is definitely closed. Toby's no longer the man he used to be. Jan left a couple, like, has sort of left that shell a couple years ago as well. And Vermaelen, good enough.
Listen, the fact he should get, there should be a medal for him even playing at all in this tournament in terms of, like, you know what? Good for you, man. Like, it doesn't matter what happened out there. Good for you.
Yeah, and I think when it comes down to it, I think that that's always sort of been Belgium's issue, is that, like, and no disrespect to Laurent Simon, but, like, they had run out Laurent Simon way past his his prime,
right.
And even him at his prime wasn't elite. I think that with the skill that they had up front, once again, I think if you were to play a little bit more safe, you might be able to squeak something out and continue to push. But when you're in the final four, final eight, like, it's a game of inches. And so sometimes you win, sometimes you don't. And they, sadly, for the last few tournaments, haven't been able to turn that corner. And it's a shame, because I think Lukaku is playing the football of his career right now. And so is De Bruyne. And, like, Timo Hazard is playing great. Like, it's a shame to see it. But at the same time, you just sort of look at that back three and you're just like, of course they lost.
Nick, you want to get your final punches in here? Or?
Well, you know what? It's just the way that they play, especially with De Bruyne and Lukaku and how dominant they've been in the last few seasons. To see them play almost a very conservative counterattack game frustrates me. And especially, you know, I called them frauds last week, but, like, I don't know. It's just, I feel like you could get more out of those players if you played a different system. But then we saw like Jeremy Doku, who looked absolutely insane in that game against Italy. Like, he's going to get a big paycheck.
How many times do you think he was Googled during that match? Had to explode into the millions. I think the critique, though, and perhaps it says something more about soccer in general when it comes to the international game, like what Sean was talking about in terms of like Southgate mastering international football coaching. Like, basically, it feels like almost 80% of these guys are setting up their teams that way, not to get carved by some random team with a couple of fast wingers who've got crazy skill, no matter how good you are. And sometimes aesthetically, it makes just pretty dull watching. I think we've been lucky this tournament to not get that often. But when you see teams that loaded not kind of put it all out there like that, it is disappointing. And that's why I went at Roberto Martinez so hard, because when you hear him talk, it doesn't sound like he likes it that much sometimes. But that's the game. That's the paradox. All right. Final picks, guys, because we got the final on Sunday. You're going to have to guess the semis and the final. Nick, you have to go first. Who is beating who in the final?
It's tough because last week I said Spain's going to win because I wanted to be, you know, dramatic. But I think it's going to come down to England and Italy. And I'm going to say that England wins 1-0 off a goal from Harry Kane. And that's a wrap.
Wow.
Sean,
I don't see a way that this doesn't end with Italy lifting the trophy. They've been, just from the first kick, they've been the class of the tournament. And if they don't find a way, I don't think that they can be disappointed. But at the same time, this is their tournament to lose, I think, at this point. And I think that they're a favorite to continue into next year's World Cup. That being said, they'll need to find a replacement for Chiellini at some point. The old man is stuck together with tape, but if Chiellini can keep going, that'd be incredible. But they'll need to find that replacement. But they're, and this is the first time I'll ever say it, but like, I'm completely happy with the way that Italy has been playing. They play fun soccer to watch. Like, I have no problem, aside from just a loud day in Toronto, if they win at all.
I'm going to pick England to beat Italy in the final. 3-1. Put it out there.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, what is going?
The beautiful game, folks. Wow. It's a beautiful game. All right. There you have it. When we come back to wrap up the show, it's the mailbag. Ask AFP.
Welcome back, and it's now time for everyone's favorite segment, Ask AFP. Thanks to everyone who sent their questions this week. If you didn't get the chance to send in your own questions, just hop on Twitter and use the hashtag AskAFP and send them our way. Sean, does it feel a little bit weird to hear me read those words that you said famously all those times?
It's like a lullaby. I feel so nice and warm inside to hear somebody else say it. It's really nice. You did a great job.
Thank you. So the first question, I got to say, on my Twitter feed, all on that England game, but all I kept hearing about was Luke Shaw and Jadon Sancho 8,000 times from all the Manchester United fans. But Peter asks, what do you think of the Jadon Sancho transfer to United? The rumors were also that he didn't want to play for England until the transfer went through. What do you make of that? Is that true, do you think?
I think probably that there was some conversations had between Manchester United, Gareth Southgate, and all the interested parties, including Sancho's reps, just to be smart about it. Like, he didn't need to play, really. They have a wealth of riches. I think it makes a lot of sense. So not a big deal at all. And he's playing now. It's a bit terrifying, to be honest, as a fan of not Manchester United in the Premier League. I'm a bit concerned because I think they seem to have got a singular focus right now on winning the league, and looking at who they're getting, not just Sancho, but it looks like Camavinga might be coming to Manchester United as well. It's upsetting, Sean. I'm a bit concerned.
Oh, it's definitely not something you want to see right now. I think that team continues to get stronger and stronger, and bringing in just elite level players. And even if it's just one or two a year, which like not many teams get to do, but you can see City or Chelsea or whatever bringing in like Havertz, et cetera, last year. But this is just like, you just see, this is our target. This is who we're going to go get. And you just start to see that lineup just get together. And it's just like this. I think that this might be United's year to usurp
with that manager, though.
That's what I was gonna say.
They're doing well. It'll be very interesting to see how this goes. I don't know I don't know. It's a weird situation where I think no matter what the skill set and the way that he plays, they're going to be in the top four, definitely in the hunt for the title.
For sure.
But it's like, how do you sack a guy who's in third place? It's a tough one, but you can do it when you start setting expectations and saying things like, we must win the league, and that needs to come from above. But I still think that I think that the skill level is going to get to the level where I think that they can beat City over a 38-game season.
All right. BK asks, how will Nuno Espirito Santo do at Tottenham? Was he the right man for the job, Sean?
Oh, that pronunciation was incredible. Just incredible.
Wow. Thank you.
I'm just going to call him the Tottenham manager from here on in, just so that I don't have to try.
Good idea.
But was he the right man for the job? That remains to be seen. I think that everyone during this saga thought they were the right man for the job, and here we are. But that being said, I think when we started looking for a manager, and we being Tottenham, ages ago, he was definitely near the top of my list just because of what he had done at Wolves and the success he had with bringing kids through the system and finding diamonds in the rough. And I just think that when you're a team like Tottenham and you rely on you, like, I'm not going to cry that Tottenham are a poor club or anything by the means, but they're not who they're chasing. They're not going to be spending $100 million on Jadon Sancho, et cetera, et cetera. They're going to have to be very wise with their money, and they're going to have to find opportunities to do what they can when they get money in from a sale, et cetera. So I think finding somebody who isn't Antonio Conte, who has an unlimited checkbook and wants to bring in who he wants, I think that you needed to bring in somebody who understood the assignment, who is a little bit conservative when it comes to the way that they play, understanding that they're not Manchester City and they need to sort of tighten up where they need to. But I think that he's a good hire. I know, once again, I think Mauricio Pochettino was the dream hire, and I think he's still the perfect man for the job. But I really do think that this is a right hire. And could I be eating crow in 6 to 8 weeks? Maybe. But I really do like the way that the Wolves team was playing, and I thought that everyone got a little too distracted with defensive style and Jose Mourinho, and it just felt a little weird. But what do you think as a non Tottenham fan?
Yeah, I think you guys not lucked into it, but in the end you got kind of saved, because I agree. I think this is a good hiring, and most of the names mentioned beforehand, I don't think would have ended well. Like, I think Conte might have been the best, but like you said, like, I don't know what their long-term play is, or like if he's sticking around long-term. Like, it didn't seem like a long-term thing, or even a relatively shortish, like 2 to 3 year thing. I think with Nuno, you can get a better idea of where he all stands, or what he wants to do within this 2 to 3 years that the contract runs. I maybe by accident, but I think you guys did okay. And it's not as banterish as it could have been in the beginning. And again, like, I cannot shit on Spurs because I'm an Arsenal fan. Like, look at what's going on there. And it's weird because, like, I feel like there is a huge, not a vacuum, but the clubs that can do what they want and have the money to do what they want in England really are unfettered in terms of controlling and dominating the league for however as long as they want. Like, if Manchester United is serious about this, and Manchester City is serious about this, and Chelsea is serious, and Liverpool is serious, like, they all are, and they've shown it, like, the gap is going to get way bigger. So although I think Spurs did well this hire, I'm like, man, are we even in the same stratosphere of this conversation right now? It doesn't feel like it.
Totally. And I think my last thing that I think that has been missing from Tottenham since Mauricio's days, and even prior to the last 6 to 8 months, because it feels like a lot of infighting. But I think that Nuno can bring that sort of family
collection
back to the team, because I really felt like something that Jose does everywhere he goes, it sort of creates infighting and creates you versus me. We all got to be killers. And when I'm like, but the team succeeded the most when they were all fighting in a collective together and believing in each other and going on miracle runs that they had no business going on to, because once again, they were a collective and a group that believed in the same thing and pushed forward. And the power of that, whether talking TFC or Tottenham or any team, the power of that is extremely strong. And when you have it a group believing together. You can take a team that is 18th place and find yourself in 11th or 6th or jump up where you need to be. So I think that that's a huge point that I'm really hoping that Nuno brings back to Tottenham.
And finally, Jason on Twitter asked about Jozy Altidore. I think we talked about it a little bit, but I'm going to ask, where do you think this saga ends? I feel like it's a kind of weird situation when it seemed like upper management kind of backed Chris Armas, and now it's like they have a tail in between their legs until like, well, what do we do about Jozy? Where do you think this ends? Or if he moves on, where do you think he goes?
So I think we club-wise, really, I'm not sure it's worth guessing anymore because he needs to be out of the contract really for it to open up some opportunities. I think there is a room for him. There's an opportunity for him to come back. But like you said, Nick, I don't think it was just about Armas either. I think it's like about some larger things than that. I don't think the fallout was with Armas only either. So that call they had on Sunday, I hope it went well. I think there's only one road back really for both parties here. And I think for an organization as well, who might need some goodwill on this return to Toronto and with the way things have gone this year, it makes sense for them to try as hard as possible to see if they can repair things here. And if they can't, which I'm sure we'll hear about, then so be it. But the full court press has to be on here, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't know how it will end because I don't know what was said, what was in the room, but how do I want it to end? I want Jozy to retire in Toronto, and that doesn't mean in a year. I have 3 more years of Jozy. Get him healthy, get him back on the field, and get him scoring goals. I think the thing that's been lost over the last 2 years, whether it be through the pandemic or even just a little bit before with his injury issues, is that he should be treated as a Toronto hero. I know he says some things sometimes or as a big personality, but he lifted this team in moments where they needed to be lifted to incredible heights. And I think lost in all this is that it's become more of a sideshow. And I think he needs to be celebrated more. I know injuries are an issue, but that is something that can and cannot be like put on the person. Some people just have a body that just doesn't work like others. It's like how he's absolutely gifted in one way, and then on the other end is he finds a way to get injured. It's just the way it happens. But just seeing other players go down similar paths, and whether it's just be injuries or controversy, but I really want to see his final years be him filling the net, and not even just like 10 goals a year, playing games, being celebrated is how I want it to end. I see players like Michael Owen in the past who had such a great heights, made a wrong move, and then got injured a bunch, and then sort of was looked at as a bit of a joke for the last few years of his career. And we're talking about one of the greatest strikers to play in a certain time. And I just don't want that to happen to Jozy, especially to somebody who brought this club so much joy, and to see the club, the fans at some point turning their back on him. And I want him to be celebrated, and I hope that everyone can celebrate him after this is all done.
The door is open, hopefully. Again, sad to see anyone lose their job, but I think this is potentially a new chapter going forward. We'll see what they make of it. Never a dull moment when it comes to TFC. But again, it's quite perfect to have Mr. Sean Kay with us to recount it all. Shawnee, you're always welcome back. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you very much for having me. And it was a complete joy to spew TFC for a long time. So I really appreciate
like old
it.
Just
yeah, it won't be the last of me, I'm sure of that.
Awesome. A reminder, folks, before you go, a rating or a review wherever you get this podcast would be wonderful for us. We're also on Twitter at A Football Pod, as well as on patreon.com/AFootballPodcast. Join today. You get the show early on Mondays right after we record. You get the show ad free. Plus, you join us on the Discord where we're chatting footy all the time. All right. For producer Dylan, for Sean, and for Nick, thank you so much for listening to AFP. We'll talk to you next week.